Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, July 27th, 2023. Cocaine concealed in cheese wheels seized at Presidio Port of Entry by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio. Last Thursday, Customs and Border Protection officials intercepted a smuggler attempting to bring cocaine into the United States by concealing the drug in wheels of cheese. 17.8 pounds of the narcotic was recovered over the course of the search. Before the search was initiated, a 22-year-old United States citizen was pulled over for secondary inspection after declaring four wheels of cheese. The cheese was run through an X-ray scanner, which revealed anomalies, per a Customs and Border Protection press release. Presidio Port Director Daniel Mercado said that concealing narcotics inside of everyday items wasn't a new smuggling tactic. The thorough and extensive inspections performed by CBP officers stopped this unusual drug load from reaching its intended destination, he said. Big Bend sector spokesperson Roger Mayer was less cavalier about the seizure. I have been in my post for 30-plus years and do not recall a smuggling event involving drugs hidden in cheese before, he said. A more common occurrence is the smuggling of unauthorized agricultural products into the United States, rather than using those products to conceal other materials. In October of 2022, 484 pounds of bologna and 285 pounds of cheese were intercepted at a port of entry in El Paso. Crossing cheese in and of itself isn't a crime. It's the quantity that matters. In 2023, two high-profile cheese busts at ports of entry in New Mexico and Arizona led authorities to clarify that only personal use amounts of cheese may enter the United States, limited to around 10 pounds. Mayer explained that in this case, not only were the seized drugs sampled and destroyed, but the cheese had to be eliminated as well via incineration and industrial waste disposal. It would be unfit, unsafe for consumption following an episode like the most recent one, he said. 2023 has been an unusually heavy year for cocaine trafficking, with a historic spike of over 29,000 pounds of cocaine seized in February 2023 alone. A report from the United Nations attributes the uptick of seizures, in part, to the easing of border crossing restrictions after the COVID-19 pandemic. The report also estimates that around 30% of the world's cocaine users are American, explaining why such large quantities of the drug are seized at ports of entry into the United States. The large number of seizures may also be due to increased efforts on the federal level to stem the flow of fentanyl and other narcotics into the United States. In March, the Biden administration announced the launch of Operation Blue Lotus, aimed at increasing the number of inspections along the border. Operation Blue Lotus is an example of how DHS surges resources and increases efficiency, prioritizing smart border security solutions and working with federal, state, tribal, and local partners, reads a Department of Homeland Security press release written in support of the program. Staff photo by Mary Cantrell. Cayetana Vargas, Sam Salazar, and Louise Culbertson lead a group of individuals marching for reproductive rights down Highland Avenue this week. District in turmoil as teachers and parents raise concerns about key decisions by MISD leadership. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBenSentinel.com. Marfa, at last week's school board meeting, outgoing 3rd through 5th grade math teacher Evelise Arguello publicly rescinded her application to stay with Marfa ISD, leaving the district with one more vacancy to fill before the impending school year. While the district has struggled to attract and retain staff over a lack of housing and low salaries, Arguello made clear her departure was due to far deeper, more systemic problems she had observed with district leadership. Arguello, in a letter read directly to the board from a podium on July 17th, accused its members of behaving unethically when making personnel decisions, fostering a hostile environment, and even hindering student progress with poor decision-making. The Marfa ISD School Board is operating unethically in their hiring and promoting decision-making processes while disregarding the best interests of the students and staff, which is negatively going to impact their academic success and achievement, read Arguello. In an interview with the Big Bend Sentinel, Arguello clarified that some of her issues with the district were personal. She had experienced conflict with Board President Teresa Nunez and claims the board had opted against rehiring her after an initial resignation due to retaliation on Nunez's part. The board has denied this, noting Nunez is one of 7 votes and that members had concerns about Arguello's repeated resignations. But she also raised concerns with the district that went beyond her own contract. Those concerns include the decision to promote teacher and coach Arturo Alferez to interim superintendent this spring, a role for which she claims he is underqualified, and a perceived lack of proactive leadership after the alarming arrests this summer of frequent MISD substitute teacher Sonia Murillo and girls' softball league coach P.J. Serrano on child sex abuse material charges. The league Serrano coached for is not affiliated with the school district. Those concerns have been echoed by 2 other MISD teachers, one who requested anonymity when speaking to the Big Bend Sentinel because they are currently employed by the district, and 2 parents whose children were interviewed by law enforcement regarding Murillo and Serrano around the time of the arrests. The Big Bend Sentinel is withholding the parents' names in order to protect the identities of the children involved. No response from the school was devastating. In May, authorities arrested P.J. Serrano after uncovering multiple videos and photos consisting of child sex abuse material on his cell phone. Shortly after, Sonia Murillo, Serrano's former romantic partner and a substitute teacher for MISD, was arrested when authorities uncovered a video of Murillo performing a sex act on a young child. Murillo was indicted on 4 counts of production and 1 count of distribution of child sex abuse material. Serrano was indicted on 1 count of possession and 1 count of transportation of child sex abuse material. Murillo was a frequent presence in the schools as an instructor. Serrano, though not affiliated with the district, coached some students with the Big Bend Amateur Softball Association. Both are Marfa ISD parents. Teachers and parents alike said they have been disturbed by a lack of response from school leadership, particularly seeing as Murillo worked for the district as a substitute teacher herself. A teacher currently employed by MISD said there has been no district-wide communication regarding the arrest and ongoing investigation, and no guidance provided to instructors as to handling parent concerns. It would have been great for us to have a meeting at least a mass email sent out. Let's talk this out and discuss our concerns and how we're going to move forward, how we would deal with kids or parents coming to us. That way we're on the same page, said the teacher. Jackie Hernandez, an outgoing teacher with the district, said a parent reached out to her seeking counseling services for their child, who had been identified by investigators as a potential victim of Murillo's, and educators had to find help outside of the school community. The school's student services coordinator, who acts as a part-time counselor, is no longer with the district and left the post at the end of June. Hernandez said she understood the confidential and sensitive nature of the situation, but more support should have been extended to families and clear directions to staff following the news. I felt like they could have done a lot more, said Hernandez. It was like everyone knew, but it was still not talked about. It was very hush-hush. The parent who contacted Hernandez received a call in mid-June from a Texas Department of Public Safety detective stating that their 11-year-old son, who attends Marfa Elementary, had been identified as a potential victim of Murillo's. The parent said Murillo met their son through the school and would drive him to sporting events and take him out to eat. The child was interviewed by law enforcement, said the parent, but they have not received any communication from the school district. The parent said they would have liked to see more resources and counseling offered by the district. They are now driving their son an hour and a half to Pecos once a week for therapy and are considering pulling their child out of Marfa ISD. No response from the school was devastating, as they are there to protect our children, they said. In early May, a 12-year-old girl who attends Marfa Junior and Senior High School was interviewed by school resource officer Ian Martinez after reporting an inappropriate verbal exchange with PJ Serrano to then Student Services Coordinator Jessica Murphy. The girl's parent, in an interview with the Big Bend Sentinel, expressed frustration with what she saw as a lack of communication from law enforcement and school leaders in the aftermath. I had the feeling that the school didn't care much, they said. I wish they would have offered my daughter more support and protection. I wish they would have talked to me as a parent to reassure me my daughter was safe going back to school. The parent said they would like their daughter to receive counseling this coming school year, as the encounter with Serrano, which did not take place on school grounds, was traumatizing. Arguello, who is also the parent of two sons who attended Marfa Elementary, said she would have liked to see a community meeting for parents called immediately to start to rebuild that bridge of trust. Considering Murillo was a district employee and educators maintain relationships with local families throughout summer break. We take care of these kids, something to show that support and care, said Arguello. None of that has happened. The district's muted response stands in sharp contrast to those following other local crises, both in the MISD community and in a neighboring district. In 2018, after the murder of MISD teacher Sophia Sullivan, then-Superintendent Oscar Aguero collaborated with the Region 18 Education Service Center to bring in teams of counselors from around the area to offer mental health support for students and staff. That was just something that was our standard practice when I was there, to say, hey, let's make sure our kids are okay, said Aguero in a recent interview with the Big Bend Sentinel. Last year, when longtime Valentine ISD teacher Albert Ackley was arrested and charged with one count production and one count distribution of child sex abuse material, Superintendent Debbie Engel was in regular contact with law enforcement. At the time, Engel told the Big Bend Sentinel authorities had searched the school's devices, counselors had interviewed staff and students, and no victims associated with the school were found. The Marfa School Board and Interim Superintendent Alvarez said they had been unaware of any students' involvement in the investigations. Alvarez said the district remains committed to working with law enforcement, but to date, no authorities had reached out. Board President Teresa Nunez said that the district intends to take action to understand following the resignation of Aguero in March. At the time of Murillo's arrest, Alvarez was at the helm of the district. The Marfa ISD Board of Trustees consisted of President Teresa Nunez, Renee Gonzalez, Lori Flores, Yolanda Jurado, Ruben Martinez, and Ernie Villarreal at the time, and has since grown to include new member Stella Fuentes. One of the school board's primary roles is to hire and evaluate the superintendent, the district's top administrator, who receives a significant salary and subsidized housing in Marfa. Previous Superintendent Aguero, who was with the district for 8 years serving in various capacities, earned an annual salary of $116,000 for the 2022-2023 school year, according to information made public by the Texas Education Agency. Since Alvarez's appointment, the board has not publicly announced whether it intends to conduct a search for a new full-time permanent superintendent and has not posted the position. In response to a request for comment from the Big Bend Sentinel, the board confirmed it intends to onboard Alvarez into the position permanently. Alvarez, who worked as a social studies teacher and coach before becoming interim superintendent at Marfa ISD, has previous administrative experience with Presidio ISD, including with career and technical education, CTE, programs, and holds a Master of Education in School Administration from Sol Ross State University, but does not currently hold principal or superintendent certifications, qualifications earned through state programs, and testing typically required for the role. While there is no time limit on how long an interim superintendent may hold the role before becoming a certified superintendent, Alvarez and the school board said he is currently pursuing his superintendent certification through a program with Region 18. Luann Porter, previous Marfa Junior High and High School principal, who served as a principal in Fort Davis for many years before coming to MISD, said she expressed interest in the superintendent position when it became available. She looked into obtaining her superintendent certification and secured a mentor, but was never asked by the school board to submit a formal application, she said. She has accepted an assistant principal position at Fort Stockton High School and formally resigned from Marfa ISD last week. Former Superintendent Aguero told the Big Bend Sentinel that he recommended Porter for the job upon his resignation to the school board, but declined to comment further. Porter declined to comment on whether her resignation was directly related to the appointment of Alvarez as interim superintendent. "I have enjoyed working in Marfa. We have an outstanding group of teachers and students," said Porter. "An opportunity came up in Fort Stockton for me, and I just feel like that's something I need to do." The school board said Porter was considered for the superintendent role, but they believed promoting Alvarez, therefore adding him to the leadership team of which Porter was already a part of, would maximize student outcomes. The board said there is no definite date or plan to hire a new superintendent, and that they believe Alvarez's appointment as interim superintendent is in the best interest of the district. Arguello said she and fellow colleagues would have liked to see the Board of Trustees hire a professional consulting firm to conduct the search for the new superintendent, as well as the solicitation of staff and community feedback to help inform their decision. "We were not asked for our opinion at all," said Arguello. "Staff was not given a survey. Parents were not given a survey. The community was not asked, 'What do you need in a superintendent?'" Arguello Hernandez and the other teacher interviewed for this story said they felt that the school board overlooked Porter, who they said was a knowledgeable candidate who would help keep the district in compliance with the state. And Alferez's appointment didn't seem to be in the best interest of the district. The teacher currently with the district said the appointment seemed hasty and would have benefited from a more thorough search. "It was not a well-thought-out decision not to post the job so we could have feelers and maybe hire a company to do that search so it's transparent," said the teacher currently with the district. "Someone from the outside would be more likely to make decisions based on qualifications. None of this had to happen this way, and we could be in great standing if different choices were made," they added. Outgoing teachers reflect on district culture, leadership. With the start of a new school year mere weeks away, Marfa ISD is also seriously understaffed. Around 30% of its positions remain vacant. Porter's junior high and high school principal's position and other vital roles, including two math teachers for grades 6 through 12, cafeteria director, and more, are unfilled. Alferez said a history and a math teacher for the high school should be hired soon. As outgoing instructors, both Arguello and Hernandez cited feeling overworked due to inadequate staffing. The school board voted last year to adopt a 4-day instructional week for the coming year in order to give teachers more time for planning and mental health, as well as concerns with district leadership that had helped prompt their departures. For one, Arguello and Hernandez expressed ethical concerns over the makeup of the school board itself, particularly over the continued presence of member Ernie Villarreal, brother of board president Teresa Nunez, who was put on administrative leave, then resigned from his role as finance director at Valentine ISD when an audit revealed $165,000 of unauthorized transactions and instances of falsified documents, prompting a criminal investigation. Villarreal has not been charged with a crime. The school board said Villarreal is an elected position and they will respect whatever outcome the community chooses when his seat is up for election in May 2025. The past two school board elections, in May 2022 and May 2023, were canceled due to a lack of candidates vying for the positions. Then there are practical considerations plaguing the district, like substandard teacher pay. Hernandez said she is leaving the district for another teaching job in the state that will pay her around $20,000 more than Marfa ISD. "A big part of why I'm leaving is financially, for one. Two, it's like the whole character, what the school is representing. I don't want to be a part of that," said Hernandez. The school board said they intend to review employees' salaries in their upcoming board meeting, and they were disappointed that the Texas legislature has not approved significant funding for teacher salaries as anticipated in recent legislative sessions. The board said they remain focused on filling vacancies within the district, take hiring recommendations from the superintendent and hiring committees very seriously, and will work to improve communication and any fissured relationships with faculty in the community. "We want our parents, students, and staff to know, to the fullest extent possible, what is happening and why," wrote board members in a statement to the Big Bend Sentinel. In the coming year, we will be delivering messages to our community via several outlets to help build that trust that we are doing what is in the best interest of our students. As it stands, Marfa ISD teachers are underpaid, stretched thin, and have a hard enough time meeting basic needs, said Arguello, meaning enrichment initiatives for students and community often fall by the wayside. If we're just trying to get through each school day, just surviving, how are we meeting the social-emotional needs of students, said Arguello. How are we able to engage a community? Staff photo by Mary Candrell. In the lead up to the 2023-2024 school year, turmoil over staffing and recent criminal investigations is causing division among the school board and some faculty at Marfa ISD. Border Network for Human Rights releases annual Abuse Documentation Campaign Report by Sam Karras, Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. El Paso. Last week, the Border Network for Human Rights, BNHR, released its annual Abuse Documentation Campaign, detailing instances of alleged mistreatment at the hands of federal, state, and local immigration authorities. The El Paso-based nonprofit serves as a watchdog for human rights abuses by law enforcement on the border and aims to empower border communities through connection and education. For the first time since the program's origins 2 decades ago, Presidio was included in the Abuse Documentation Campaign. Last year, new BNHR offices in Presidio and Del Rio were unveiled, expanding the program's reach to smaller border communities downstream of El Paso. The report breaks down 52 cases of alleged abuse reported to BNHR by the numbers, in hopes of reforming immigration policy at all levels of government. While the data is limited to cases collected by the nonprofit, the organization still believes that information is powerful. We believe these cases reflect the systemic pattern of impunity under which law enforcement agencies interact with migrants, refugees, and border residents, the report reads. Alleged abuse by law enforcement is broken down into 31 categories, ranging from physical abuse and deprivation of necessities in detention to constitutional rights violations. The aim of the report is to shed light on these issues to prevent what the organization calls death by policy. Among the cases documented, 4 undocumented minors died in federal custody, and 1 minor and 3 adults died while migrating. These cases represent the aggravated systemic failure that disregards the rights and well-being of refugees and migrants, the report reads. The report includes narrative accounts of a handful of the documented cases, ranging from an anonymous account of Customs and Border Protection, CBP, agents breaking up a house party with excessive force to a woman who felt that she had been patted down in a very exaggerated way and worried that her child had also been touched inappropriately. One of the cases that allegedly resulted in the death of a minor in federal custody received national media attention. In May, an 8-year-old Panamanian girl died in a detention center in Harlingen, Texas, after being diagnosed with influenza. Her parents said that despite their repeated pleas for medical attention, as their daughter's situation worsened, care was never given. The rest of the cases are kept anonymous in an effort to protect those whose incidents are still under investigation or who may risk retaliation or deportation if identified. These cases are broken down into statistics to help illustrate trends observed by the organization. Among the 52 cases and 177 alleged abuses, nearly 80% involved federal immigration authorities. Presidio appeared to follow that trend. In the 10 months that the local center has been open, the group has documented 3 cases of alleged abuse, 2 by agents with Customs and Border Protection, and 1 specifically committed by Border Patrol, an agency within CBP. The 2 cases implicating Customs involved verbal or psychological abuse, violation of due process, and damage to property. The Border Patrol case accused the agency of use of disproportionate force, deprivation of medical attention and custody, and violation of due process. The organization hopes that these numbers will lead to a number of policy changes, independent oversight of federal immigration authorities, the opening of welcoming centers at the border, and preservation of the right to seek asylum. The report also calls for the disbanding of Operation Lone Star, a program launched by the state of Texas to provide over $4 billion of funding to local governments along the border. State meddling in federal immigration enforcement through Operation Lone Star has exposed border residents, migrants, and refugees to overwhelming instances of human and civil rights abuses, the report reads. Local CBP spokespeople said that they couldn't comment on the anonymous instances of abuse, but that their agencies encouraged formal reporting of abuse through official channels. El Paso sector spokesman Roger Mayer said that the agency worked with stakeholders and non-governmental organizations to help prevent and document abuse. CBP constantly works to maintain the highest level of professional standards in their interactions with all individuals encountered, he said. Mayer said that the agency maintains an online portal in English and Spanish that can be used to report a number of potential crimes committed by both migrants and CBP employees. The portal can be found at https://help.cbp.gov/s/complaints?language=en_us. Presidio County woman pleads guilty to trafficking meth, fentanyl, by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Alpine. On Friday, Cherokee Lee Perez, a Presidio County woman, pleaded guilty to 1 count of possession with intent to distribute methamphetamine and fentanyl. Her sentencing is set for October, where she faces 10 years to life in prison. Fentanyl is a narcotic that in recent years has increasingly entered the supply of street narcotics, resulting in an epidemic of overdoses. According to the Drug Enforcement Administration, fentanyl overdose is the leading cause of death among Americans under 50 and represented 67% of overdose deaths in 2021. Perez was arrested on January 12th at the Presidio Port of Entry. At the initial checkpoint, she told the Customs and Border Protection CBP officer on duty that she had nothing to declare and that she was headed to Oklahoma from Camargo, Chihuahua. She was flagged for secondary inspection, where she reiterated that she had nothing to declare. A narcotics dog alerted on the bumper and center console of the car. Further investigation revealed 29 packages of meth weighing 4.5 kilograms and 13 packages of fentanyl weighing 7 kilograms. Perez was arrested and gave a statement admitting to transporting narcotics, telling officers that she would get $7,000 for delivering the drugs to Oklahoma, and that she had successfully smuggled drugs through the Presidio Port of Entry before. Homeland Security Investigations Task Force officer Michael McCall filed a criminal complaint alleging importation of methamphetamine and fentanyl from another country into the United States, as well as possession with intent to distribute each drug. Possession of 400 grams of methamphetamine, or more than 500 grams of fentanyl, carries a felony charge, carrying a minimum of 10 years prison time. Perez's northbound shipments included over 11 times the amount required for felony possession of methamphetamine and 14 times the amount of fentanyl. Perez was detained without bond and in February pleaded not guilty. On Friday, under the advice of counsel, she entered a guilty plea. The large seizure comes on the heels of increased concern about the smuggling of fentanyl into the United States from Mexico. In November last year, Presidio County Chief Deputy Joel Nunez gave a presentation about the dangers of fentanyl to parents at Presidio High School. At the time, he cautioned that fentanyl was near, but had not yet been detected in Presidio County. Just a few weeks later, a driver was intercepted at the Presidio port of entry with 32 pounds of methamphetamine and 2 pounds of fentanyl. Perez's arrest just a few months later drastically escalated the scale of the drug moving through the port. Though relatively young, the upward trend at the Presidio port of entry reflects patterns at other ports of entry along the United States-Mexico border. According to statistics from Customs and Border Protection, fentanyl seizures at the border are on track to double by weight from last year's numbers. Perez's attorney did not return a request for comment by press time.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, July 20th. MEDC still at odds with car wash over easement. Offers $520,000 for Stockton property. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Quote, they are stopping the whole community from growing by holding onto that easement, Monahans Economic Development Corporation board member Kathy Anthony said during the board's discussion of the ongoing saga regarding an easement MEDC seeks across part of the property owned by Car Wash 828 during Monday's monthly meeting. The easement is necessary in order to connect new sewer lines for future commercial development into the established main sewer city line that is located on the Car Wash 828 property. MEDC Director Ashley Adalto briefed the board on the current situation on the easement. Quote, I sent a letter to Shelley Porras and Tracy Rodriguez on June 29th via certified mail, an email asking them to reconsider granting the easement, and reiterated the development in the East Subdivision is at a complete standstill and we can't move forward without it. As of the time of the meeting, I have not received a response, she said. Quote, what is our plan of action on the easement? Board member Hal Upchurch asked. Adalto said, quote, options going forward without the easement are limited due to pipelines in the area. It would be costly, around $250,000, and take up valuable real estate to put in a lift station, end quote. Quote, this is a big deal for the town's growth. It can't just be stagnant, member Mary Elena Sines said. Sines is the owner of PJ's Coffee, located in the vicinity of the car wash. MEDC first requested an easement from the company last October, and any commercial development on the east side of town is at a standstill until the issue is resolved. According to Adalto, Porras and Rodriguez said their SBA loan had certain stipulations and they could not proceed with the easement without compensation. Adalto said, quote, "It wasn't ethical for MEDC to have to pay for it, since the property was sold below market value, and it would set a precedent," end quote. The last response Adalto received from the car wash owners was on May 26, where they said their hands were tied since they are in the process of a refinance and they had several conflicting issues and want to make sure they are making the right decision for the company. Adalto told the board she would have conversations with Maverick Engineering about other options to present to the board during the next meeting so the board can see other options. In other business, board members approved a contract with the estate of Mary Jane Ulbrich for the purchase of the property located at 1200 South Stockton across from Lowe's Marketplace. Board members met in executive session last month and agreed to continue discussions on the property to try to get the price closer to the original offer of $440,000 after they received a counteroffer. Listing price for the property was $680,000 and the counteroffer was $580,000. Quote, "I've spoken to the real estate agents and they've talked them down to $520,000. Closing would be in September after Labor Day," Adalto said. Quote, "The property will still need to be cleared," Anthony asked. Quote, "The county will help with clearing the lot at no cost to us as part of our interlocal agreement with all the taxing entities," Adalto said. Adalto said she plans to work with a retail coach on going forward in seeking a business for the 1.1-acre lot. In regular business, the directors approved accounts payables dated July 17th, totaling $16,500, which included $6,600 for payroll and salaries, $175 to the City of Monahans, $200 for sales tax registration, along with $5,600 for a city accounting fee, and $2,100 for the building. Minutes of the June 20th regular meeting were also approved. Directors present were Hal Upchurch, Leticia Rodriguez, Mary Elena Sines, and Kathy Anthony. Member Richard Irwin was absent. Haynes accused of assaulting wife with hotel chair. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Monahans man was recently arrested on a Ward County warrant after allegedly assaulting his wife with a hotel room chair in May during an argument. Carrie Stephen Haynes, age 42, of 4609 South Veronica, turned himself in to the Ward County Sheriff's Office on July 12th for the warrant, charging him with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony. Officers were called to the Microtel, located at 813 North Interstate 20 Service Road, on May 16th, around 6:51 p.m., in reference to a disturbance. Officers spoke to Haynes' wife, later identified as the victim, who said she and Haynes were arguing about their marriage when the assault took place, according to Monahans Police Department Lieutenant Xavier Ramon. Quote, "The victim's face was swollen. She had a bloody lip and lacerations to her face. She told officers Haynes pushed her and dragged her off the bed before he began to strike her with the chair inside the hotel room," Ramon said. Haynes fled from the scene on foot prior to officers' arrival. Bond was set at $50,000, and Haynes posted the bond and was released also on July 12th. The offense carries a punishment upon conviction of a term from 2 to 20 years and the Texas Department of Criminal Justice. Phillips indicted for asking for sex from an undercover agent. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. The Ward County Grand Jury for the 143rd Judicial District, handed down two indictments on June 23rd for Brandon Lee Phillips, age 48, of Piote, on charges of solicitation of prostitution, a state jail felony, and unlawful possession of a firearm by a felon, a third-degree felony. The indictments state that on or about May 26, 2022, Phillips did knowingly agree to pay a fee to Special Agent Erich Waples for the purpose of engaging in sexual intercourse during an undercover operation. According to court documents, during the same operation, officials discovered Phillips was carrying a firearm at the La Quinta Inn and Suites in Monahans. Phillips is a convicted felon out of the 47th District Court, Amarillo, and therefore prohibited from possessing a weapon. His bond for both charges was also revoked. Bond was set at $15,000 for both the indictment and the motion to revoke bond for the prostitution charge, and $10,000 for both the indictment and motion to revoke bond for the unlawful possession of a firearm charge. Phillips remains in custody at the Ward County Jail in lieu of posting the $50,000 bond. If convicted of both charges, he could face anywhere from 2 to 10 years in prison. School board says no change in hair or dress code. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. The Monahans Wicked Piote ISD Board of Trustees met Monday and voted to keep the student handbook the same as last year, meaning the school policy on hair will remain the same as in past years. The newly passed Crown Act bill does not affect our local policy, according to Superintendent of School Chad Smith. The Crown Act, acronym for Creating a Respectful and Open World for Natural Hair, was signed into law by Governor Greg Abbott and goes into effect September 1, 2023. This bill is intended to end the discrimination of hairstyles associated with race. This bill prohibits school districts, colleges or universities, employers or labor unions to discriminate against any protected hairstyle as part of a dress code. In the bill, protected hairstyles are braids, locks, or twists. They can wear their hair in any style, braids, locks, doesn't matter, as long as the hair does not extend past the collar of T-shirt, Smith said. The MWP ISD Handbook Local Policy on Hair states, hair, facial hair. Hair must be neat and clean. There are to be no head or hair ornamentation, such as unusual hair coloring, mohawks, faux hawks, man buns, rat tails, initials, numbers, symbols, scalp designs, rollers, or hairnets. Hair coloring must be a natural hair color and cause no distraction. Boys' hair must be cut so as not to touch the eyebrows in front or extend beyond the top of the collar of a standard T-shirt. Additionally, boys' hair may not exceed the top of the ear, and boys are not allowed to wear hair in a ponytail. Beards and mustaches are not allowed. Face mask or covering is prohibited to cover facial hair. Sideburns may not extend below the earlobe in length and beyond the outer edge of the eyebrow in width. Designs cut into the eyebrows will not be permitted. All handbook can be viewed on the MWP ISD website, or you can request a printed copy from your child's school. In other actions, the board also must consider House Bill 3, which is a sweeping school safety measure and was created in response to last year's Uvalde massacre. The bill goes into effect on September 1st and presents a requirement to post an armed security officer at every school and provide mental health training for certain district employees. Monahan Schools has had these safety measures in place even before this bill was written, Assistant Superintendent Jeff Jones said. The district has their own police department, consisting of Chief Orlando Orona and Stephen Luna. Quote, Orona and Luna perform unscheduled visits to each school campus every day, and our local law enforcement, city and county, also patrol our campuses every day, stopping by to interact with the students and provide a strong safety presence for our kids, he added. No action was taken on the item, and the board will have to make a decision on how to proceed by September 1st. In other business, Smith provided a bond update to the board in which he reported the complex gym is finished. The restrooms are complete, the concession stand is usable, and the locker room has shower partitions. Quote, the band hall is pretty much done, the new pool is holding water, and the bleachers are installed. The water circulation panel got fried, possibly during the last storm, and we are waiting for the new one to come in, he said. The board also approved to have an asbestos abatement team come in and remove the asbestos from the old swimming pool structure. In regular business, accounts payable were presented by business manager Katie Jones. In the maintenance and operations report, the current tax balance for June to be collected was $790,000, which is the same for the year-to-date balance. Delinquent taxes collected for June total $919,000. Bond expenditures through June of this year have totaled $119,000. In personnel matters, resignations from David Birdwell, Shane Lynch, Christy Solem, and T.J. Greiner were all accepted. In final actionable items, the previous meeting's minutes were approved, and a budget workshop date of Monday, August 28th, was set to review and amend any budget changes. Board of Trustees present for the meeting were Josh Schwab, Raymond Reyes, Donna Garcia, Steve Tuxhorn, and Nancy Upchurch. Bobby Almanza and Steve Fine were absent from the meeting. The next regularly scheduled school board meeting will be August 28th at 6:30 p.m. in the boardroom at the MWP ISD Administration Building, 606 South Betty Street. Any individual who has a concern or question can request to be placed on the board meeting agenda. Anyone interested in addressing the Board of Trustees needs to pick up a registration form from the administration office. Individuals may only address issues which are listed on the agenda, which is posted 72 hours before the meeting date. They must be registered to speak by 12 noon on the day of the meeting and will have 4 minutes to speak. The public is encouraged to become involved in affairs concerning our students.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.